Morning.
Had some traffic issues this morning, so getting started a few minutes late. Appreciate your patience. We have one case scheduled for oral argument this morning. We understand both counsel have announced ready and declared the amount of time that you wish to take for your arguments. That being the case, we'll call Concentra Health Services, Inc. versus Amanda G. Everly. Mr. Blaze.
May it please the court, counsel. Again, my name is Grant Blaze, and I represent the defendants in the underlying cause and the appellants in this cause. The defendants are Angela DeForest, who is a physician assistant, Gordon McWatt, who is a family practice and occupational health physician, Norman McCall, who is an occupational health physician, and Concentra Medical Center. This is an interlocutory appeal arising out of the trial court's denial of a motion dismissed for the plaintiff's failure to file an adequate expert report as to all of the defendants in the underlying action. As a brief background on the claim, the allegations in this lawsuit are that the plaintiff, Amanda Everly, suffered an on-the-job injury on January 22nd of 2006. The following day, she presented to Concentra Medical Center, where she was seen and evaluated by Angela DeForest, again a physician assistant. During that visit, PA DeForest ordered meds, x-rays, and a cane, diagnosed a hip and lumbar strain sprain, and advised the plaintiff to return. The following day, the plaintiff came back to Concentra Medical Center and again was seen by PA DeForest, although the plaintiff's pleadings as well as the expert report are silent as to any treatment provided on that day. The next day, on the 27th of January of 06, the plaintiff was allegedly seen by Norman McCall, again an occupational health physician. During that visit, Dr. McCall prescribed medications as well as an MRI and instructed the plaintiff to return. As soon as the results of the MRI were known, the plaintiff never returned. Plaintiffs alleged that the plaintiff alleges that she suffered from a reflex sympathetic dystrophy, ultimately developed foot drop, and has filed this underlying action against all of the defendants in this case. The plaintiff's Chapter 74 expert is Dr. Joseph Gaines, who is an orthopedic surgeon. He initially filed a report on May 21st of 2008 in an effort to comply with the plaintiff's obligations under Chapter 74. The defendants filed a motion to dismiss for the failure to comply with Chapter 74 because Dr. Gaines failed to provide a sufficient expert report as required under the Act. The court granted, the court deemed the report insufficient, but granted the plaintiffs a 30-day extension in which to fix the problem. On September 2nd of 2008, a new report was filed by Dr. Gaines. That report was again deficient, and motion to dismiss was filed. The trial court denied that motion to dismiss. It is that second report that serves as the basis for this interlocutory appeal. I'm not going to reiterate the standards of review on appeal as it relates to evaluation of an expert report, as I'm sure the court is abundantly familiar with that standard of review. In this particular case, however, I believe that the report is deficient in every aspect. To constitute a sufficient report, a plaintiff must provide or articulate a standard of care particular to each defendant who has been sued. The report must also set forth how and in what manner each particular defendant breached that applicable standard of care, and also how and what manner the breach of each defendant caused the harm complained of. In addition, the physician or other health care providers who are providing a report must qualify as a physician, must qualify to as either a physician or health care provider to testify against the defendant against whom they are providing an opinion. Dr. Joseph Gaines' report fails on all four of those counts. As it relates to the standard of care, Dr. Gaines' report is a five-page affidavit that contains approximately 13 paragraphs. However, in that paragraph, in that report, really the meat of the alleged standard of care breach and causation are found in portions of paragraphs 9, 10, 11, and 12 of the report. As it relates to articulating a standard of care, Dr. Gaines simply does not do that. Again, we have four different healthcare providers who saw this patient or allegedly saw this patient over different periods of time. In fact, Dr. McWatt never saw the patient. Purportedly, the basis of liability against Dr. McWatt would be that he was a supervising physician over Angela DeForest. But here's the problem. Joseph Gaines, an orthopedic surgeon, does not articulate any particular standard of care for any of the healthcare providers. A physician assistant is not a physician. A medical center is not a physician. An occupational health and a family practice physician are different types of physicians. In order to qualify as an expert report, and a standard of care applicable to each separate healthcare provider must be provided in the report, or a sufficient justification must be contained in the report to say there is one standard of care that applies to all, and supply a basis for that opinion. This report fails on both accounts.
Well, isn't the essence of the affidavit that there is one standard of care that applies to all, and that is that the patient be treated within 6 months, first visit or so?
Well, Your Honor, he does say that the patient needs to be treated within 6 months, and that is presumably the standard of care that he's trying to articulate in this affidavit, and I'll get to why I believe that's deficient. But to answer your question, the affidavit does not provide a basis for saying that that's a standard of care that's applicable to a medical center, that's a standard of care that's applicable to a physician's assistant. It does not say that. And in fact, physician's assistants can't do the same things as physicians can do. They operate under a specific set of protocols and guidelines as mandated by Texas Occupation Code, I believe Section 204 or 402, I can't remember off the top of my head. And the particular types of treatments that are applicable to reflex sympathetic dystrophy entail a laundry list, some of which a PA can do, some of which a PA cannot do, depending upon the specific protocols. That's not articulated anywhere in this report. He basically says, you should have gotten to her and done something within 6 months. Well, if in fact that's a standard, a physician assistant can only do so many things, a medical center can only do so many things, and physicians can do certain things. And unless he explains why all three or all four of these particular separate healthcare providers who are in different disciplines, one an entity, one a physician assistant, and two physicians, that they can do the same thing, then just to articulate one purported standard of care is insufficient as to each of the defendant's healthcare providers. I believe the case law that has been cited in our brief, as well as a recent opinion out of this court in April, that talks about a report's failure to identify and articulate how and why a PA has a standard of care that is the same as a physician, is an insufficient report as to a physician's assistant. You've got to, in your report, say, look, you should have done this, you didn't do this, and because of that, here's your problem. In this particular case, there is actually no standard of care articulated. The essence of the report is you misdiagnosed and failed to treat. As it relates to a standard of care, what he says is, it is my opinion that Concentra Medical Center and doctors McWatt, McCall, and P.A. DeForest, within a reasonable medical degree of certainty, breached the applicable medical standards of care to Ms. Everly. Specifically, they failed to provide treatment for RSD within the first 6 months of her injury for the conditions she was suffering, which resulted in a permanent foot drop. Okay. Now, that relates to the failure to provide treatment for RSD. He does not articulate a standard of care as it relates to any claimed misdiagnosis of RSD. Nowhere in his report does he say the failure to diagnose RSD was a breach of the standard of care, nor does he articulate a standard of care for actually diagnosing RSD. He does not address what specific conduct these healthcare providers did for Ms. DeForest or what they should have done for Ms. Everly, the plaintiff, or what they should have done for Ms. Everly when she presented. There's no presenting symptoms that they should have been aware of, no diagnostic studies, no assessments, no nothing.
Your position is that the article that the doctor attached that generally described treatment for this condition is not enough to describe what treatment should have been provided?
That is correct, Your Honor, and if I can explain a little bit more.
Could you answer
that question first, please?
Oh, sure. Okay. First of all, the article, it's while an interesting article, it does not purport to say the standard of care for either diagnosing or treating RSD is this. What it does say is, here are some things you do for RSD, and it lists them. Physical therapy, sympathetic block, tranquilizers, analgesics, surgical sympathectomy, and corticosteroids. And it says, and it goes through and it talks about various combinations of these types of treatments that are effective or not so effective, how and where you may or may not use these particular types of treatment. And in fact, it talks about, you know, physical therapy and sympathetic block appear to me the most widely recommended treatment. But don't do it in all cases. It depends upon the severity because overzealous therapy can actually be worse. What it basically says is here are some things you do. It does not, in this article, expressly say here's what you have to do. And it does not even impliedly say here's what you have to do. All it basically says is it's good to have these types of treatments and the quicker the better. In fact, it doesn't even purport to provide a standard that requires treatment within 6 months. And Dr. Gaines, in his report, says standard of care is to treat within 6 months. The article says nothing about it. What it basically says is, if you treat them faster, within 6 months, generally, you have better outcomes. Justice Dauphineau?
Oh, I just wanted to follow up on his question that he asked before you answered it, but that's okay. Never mind.
Okay. So what you have as it relates to this article is information about a particular condition. It does not provide, it does not supply the missing pieces that are required in an expert report in order to meet the requirements or the standards of Chapter 74. It does not purport to say, here's how you treat. It gives you options, which I think which is really important here because surgical sympathectomy, is he saying that we should have done a surgical sympathectomy? He doesn't say it in his report, and this article doesn't say you have to do it. And in fact, a physician's assistant can't do that, nor frankly can a family practice physician, nor frankly can a medical center. So in fact, that's the whole point of, look, you've got these separate healthcare providers. You need to articulate what you did, what you should have done, what you didn't do, and how it causally related to the damages claim. This report is wholly devoid of that. It's got an article attached that says, here's some good treatments, but there's a laundry list of treatments. It doesn't say you have to engage in these treatments, and failure to treat begs the question. And that's all he says. You failed to treat. But you have to specifically say, and I think the case law is pretty clear, you can't just say you should have diagnosed and treated him. It's here's what you should have done to diagnose it. Here's what you do to treat. This report is wholly devoid of that information.
Now, is this report that we're reviewing, let me restate that. Did the original report have the same deficiencies that you're now complaining of?
Yes, Chief Justice Casey. Okay. In essence, the second report is fairly similar to the first report. The second report attempted to bolster the qualifications of Dr. Gaines to testify as to all of these healthcare.
So providers. that was your challenge to the first report, or was the qualifications portion of the report, not to this aspect of it?
Actually, my challenge to the first report was to all aspects of it. All aspects that are currently on appeal. You failed to articulate a standard, you failed to articulate a breach, you failed to properly tie the breach to a causal connection. The amended report, I mean, plaintiffs were given an opportunity to fix the problem. They were given 30 days. They filed the second affidavit, and they attempted to fix the qualifications problem, and I guess attempted to fix the other problem, although if you look at the language of the affidavits, they didn't do much to help. The bottom line is this second affidavit still doesn't get them there. I see my time is up.
What's the difference?
Chief Justice, can I ask him one question, even though his time is up? Mr. Blais, what do the words at Section 6, defining expert report in the statute we're looking at, calls for a fair summary of the expert's opinions. What do those words mean to you, fair summary?
Well, a fair summary, as it has been interpreted by the courts, means you don't have – this isn't a situation where your entire testimony relating to what the doctor or the physician or healthcare provider should have done is contained. You don't have to try your case in an affidavit. But what it does say under Palacios is that you have to provide specific information regarding what the healthcare providers should have done differently.
And if they say they failed to diagnose and they failed to treat, that's not a fair summary.
That is not a fair summary. That is what is known as conclusory, and the case law that addresses it, I believe also expressly, I believe in the Merritt case, where they said they failed to diagnose and to consult was conclusory. And the reason is, again, that's a question-begging statement. You failed to treat. Well, what does that mean? Somebody comes to you with a heart problem. You failed to treat it. Well, what does that mean? Should I have given you medication? Should I have done an angiogram? Should I have done a quadruple bypass? Failure to treat opens up the question that actually should be answered in the affidavit, and that is, what should you have done?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Counselor. Mr. Coates. Mr. Coates, could you tell the court what the differences are between the first report that was stricken and this report?
I would classify, may it please the court, I would classify the second report as an amended report. In other words, it incorporates.
Well, I know it's amended, but what's the differences in terms of the issues that we're discussing now? Did Dr. Gaines provide the same testimony in the first affidavit on causation, on standards of care, that he did in the second report, or is there some differences between the two?
No, his opinions were essentially the same. They were articulated and expanded upon in the second report. I know this court has addressed situations where you have one expert report maybe on liability and standard of care and one on causation, and you read the reports together. That's not the situation in this case.
No, I'm more concerned about the and this I don't intend to I'm just concerned about the issue of laying behind the log when there's a problem with a report and the opponent of the report doesn't point that out the first time, and then there's the 30 days extension given to do an amended report, and then for the first time come up and say, well, there's a problem here, but they didn't raise it the first time.
And I agree with the court that is a problem. And I do want to, at the outset, address the issue of the standard of review and remind the court, of course, that it is an abuse of discretion standard.
Okay, was that
what
a problem
wrong,
in this case,
what was
the
wrong
problem
with the
that
first
I was raising? Is
what
that
was
a problem?
Wrong with the first report, and how'd you fix it?
Thank you.
First of all, I was not trial counsel, so I didn't fix it. But
you've read both reports,
I've read
right?
both reports. And,
okay.
And what to try and answer your question, in this type of practice, the tendency, I think, of defense counsel is to throw a shotgun blast at the first report. And so, unlike some cases where there might be two or three specific objections that can be cured, the initial objections attacked all aspects of the report. There's no requirement that the objections be specific or tailored, and so it is a shotgun blast. The report was amended in order to include additional information with respect to Dr. Gaines' qualifications and additional information with respect to his opinions about this particular case and the standard of care. And I know that a critical question for this court is the concept that the same standard of care can apply to all of the different defendants who have been sued. And in Dr. Gaines' amended report, he addresses that. It's 94 of the clerk's record. But he determines, and I'll read just a portion of it, there were certain minimal, reasonable, prudent, and accepted standards of medical and surgical care that applied that were in effect at or about and throughout the time that Mrs. Everly received her treatment and was damaged. And then he goes on to say, these reasonable, prudent, and accepted standards of care in the diagnosis, care, and treatment and management of patients who receiving care such as Mrs. Everly's were applicable to all physicians and surgeons, and he'd already talked about hospital staff. So one of the things that was accomplished in the second report was to make clear that the standards that he was discussing and that he determined were breached were equally applicable to all the defendants in this case. Back to Justice Meyer's questions about a fair summary, that is correct. That's what the statute says. The cases have held that the plaintiffs are not required to marshal all their proof, nor could they when the report's due within 120 days of filing suit and there's either no or very limited discovery in most of these cases. So the reporting doctor, Dr. Gaines in this case, is pretty much limited to the medical records that were available and doesn't have the luxury in most cases, and in this case in particular, reviewing depositions or otherwise, or witness
what statements. What he didn't give appear to give a very fair summary of is what type of treatment or what should have been done to treat and or to properly diagnose. Just simply saying fail to treat or fail to diagnose, concerned may not be enough without saying, well, you know, what type of treatment are you talking about here?
Well, and one thing I want to point out, and we pointed this out in the brief, this is not a situation where we have alleged or Dr. Gaines opined that additional diagnostic tests were required in order to diagnose the condition. He says in his report that she presented with the cardinal signs of RSD, and from that, the standard of care required them to diagnose and treat. So it's different than cases where you say you should have done this or you should have done that, and if you'd done that, which the standard of care required, if you'd done a CT scan, which the standard required, then in reasonable medical probability you would have seen the condition. He says that just based on the information in her medical records alone that she presented with the cardinal signs and should have been treated.
Does that mean that it was so obvious that any doctor would have known that that's what it is, and therefore, is that?
Yes, I think that's what Dr. Gaines is saying, that you don't need to go out and engage in additional diagnostic testing. And then he follows that up with saying that she didn't receive any treatment for it. So it's not a question of he quibbles with the treatment that she was given, or he believes that a different treatment would have been more effective. And, of course, many of the treatments are discussed in the Exhibit B that he attaches to his report. But he attaches blame and violation of standard of care that they didn't provide any treatment whatsoever.
And you don't believe that there ought to be at least some to identify some type of treatment rather than even the article that he attaches is just so it's so general, and it indicates that nobody really knows exactly, you know, what you can do to successfully treat this condition.
And I think that may be a judgment call, and I think if they had provided some treatment, and Dr. Gaines was critical of that and believed that a different kind of treatment should have been provided, then yes, I think the treatment that was given versus the treatment that he felt would have been more effective would have to be discussed.
There was a treatment given, though.
Not for the RSD. The only treatment that was given related to the hip flexor, as I recall it. And so the condition of RSD, despite presenting cardinal signs, was not diagnosed, and there was no treatment afforded to that condition. And so it's not a question of having an expert, you know, criticize this treatment and recommend this treatment, in which case a discussion of the efficacy of the different treatments would be required. This is a situation where there is absolutely no treatment given whatsoever. And so in that sense, this is a simplistic report, but it's a simplistic theory. As Mr. Blaze indicated during his argument, he said, you know, the essence of this case is a misdiagnosed condition and a failure to treat. And that is the essence of the case. And that's the essence of the case that's easily seen in the report. The report's very clear, but it's not complicated. This is not a complicated case. The plaintiffs have pled it simply. The plaintiffs have produced a report from a very qualified doctor who says that the defendants in this case misdiagnosed it, failed to treat it, and then he attributes a cause of that to the foot drop syndrome because of the failure to treat within the 6 months.
I guess if I were the defendant doctor, just hypothetically, I would want to know, well, what is it that that she presented that I should have noticed was indicative of this condition, and what is it that I should have done that I didn't do, given that I should have recognized the condition? I mean, it seems to me that fair notice would at least require some basic information like that.
Well, and I understand that. And obviously it's not something that is not going to be afforded to the doctors over the course of the case through discovery and through special exception. But I think the concept is a fair, which you said, but notice, a fair summary, as Justice Meyer pointed out, of the claims. At some point, you don't have to marshal all the evidence. You don't have to list all the conditions. You don't have to describe all the treatments. You just have to give a summary, a fair summary.
Well, just listing one condition that was presented and one type of treatment that should have been provided, it, I don't think, is marshaling facts or anything like that. It's just giving notice to the doctor what they did wrong, allegedly.
All right. I understand that. The problem...
Well, let me ask you this question. You've got the affidavit. My understanding of the affidavit is that it's a tool for screening out frivolous lawsuits. And then you've got the pleadings. In your opinion, based on your experience in the law, where do you get the specificity? In the plea, are you limited by your pleadings? I mean, when you try your lawsuit, do you try it according to your pleadings? Or does the discovery of the allegations in the lawsuit come exclusively from the affidavit? I mean, what's the function of each?
Completely different. The function of the affidavit is, as you correctly said, to weed out the frivolous lawsuit and to give the trial court an opportunity to dismiss at an early stage and prior to extensive litigation cost a lawsuit that doesn't belong in the courthouse. It's an extreme remedy, and I'm not saying it's not ever properly invoked, but it's a death penalty sanction, essentially, for failing to set forth any basis or any fair basis for your claim. The pleadings are completely different. The pleadings are what control the evidence, the theories. They're refined. They're subject to special exception. They are amended throughout the case as the discovery provides new information, either for claims or for defenses. There are summary judgments. Now we have no evidence summary judgments. So all of those things throughout the life of a case, a year or 2 years in a medical malpractice case, that was before the interlocutory appeal process started, all of those things are done throughout the case so that when the trial judge takes the case to trial, there are a set of issues, a set of claims, a set of defenses, a set of facts that have been weeded out and are going to be presented to the jury. And so causes of action that aren't supported or particular claims that aren't supported in the evidence go away through summary judgment or through special exception. The issues are refined and the parties go to trial free of ambush, knowing what they're going to prove to the jury or what they're going to attempt to disprove. The report function doesn't do that. In fact, it's possible to file a very simple lawsuit, file a very simple report, and then as the discovery progresses, find new evidence or new claims, not add new defendants, but add additional information to the case. There's no requirement or procedure for additional reports. The report was to determine whether the case should be in the courthouse to begin with. And so issue narrowing, claim elimination, those are matters that I think are properly dealt with in pleadings, motions for summary judgment, special exceptions.
Mr. Cobbs, in the affidavit, page 4, paragraph 9, you mentioned a while ago about cardinal signs of RSD.
Yes, sir.
And in the first portion of paragraph 9, there's a description of what apparently came from the medical records at Concentra Medical Center about what was the nature of the on-the-job injury. And the description there talks about things that related to what was felt whenever she hurt herself. And I'm trying to determine what it is that you're talking about that you think Dr. Gaines meant by cardinal signs. If he's talking about snapping her left hip, moving a 20-pound box, and a leg that went cold and numb, are those the cardinal signs we're talking about, or is there some other signs?
Those are the signs that he references in his report. The cold and numb leg, which he divined from the medical records from Concentra. He doesn't say there are any other cardinal signs. So when the following sentence says she presented with cardinal signs of RSD, presumably those are the signs that he is referring to.
And if those are the things relied upon by Dr. Gaines in giving fair notice to the failure to diagnose, is that what your position is before the court?
My position is that the report is adequate to apprise the defendant and, most importantly, the trial court of the basis for the statements that he gives and to allow the trial court to determine correctly that the case has merit, it's not frivolous, and should proceed. Now, the defendant doesn't go to trial on this report. This report's not admissible into evidence. So it has no binding effect on the issues that are tried in the trial court. So it's not a situation where the defendant can say, you said in your report this, and now you're saying something else. This is just to allow the trial court to determine whether the case should proceed. I expected the defendant, through depositions and written discovery, will completely cover what the cardinal signs are, what the symptoms are. The plaintiff will have to designate an expert to testify in the case, and that expert will have to produce a report that would be theoretically admissible for impeachment purposes.
I read the report last night, and I can't recall where, if anywhere, it indicated that Dr. Gaines was familiar with the field of physician's assistants and identified what his background is and what a physician assistant would do. Can you tell me where that is?
It's in paragraphs 5 and 6 where he talks about hospital staff and employees. He doesn't say specifically physician assistants, but they would fall within that category. He says he's familiar with all the different aspects of care and diagnosis in a hospital setting, not just the doctors, but the employees of the hospital.
I guess that's why I don't remember it, because it was so general. Thank you, Mr. Copes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Blaze.
Thank you, Your Honor. As a follow-up to your concern, Chief Justice Casey, about the initial report and the motion that was filed by the defendants as it related to that initial report, I believe that I'm calling this from memory because I don't have the motions to dismiss in front of me, but I think the record will reflect the initial initial motion to dismiss challenged all aspects of the report, the same aspects of the report that we are challenging in the second report. This was not a situation where the defendants laid behind the log, challenged the qualifications of Dr. Gaines, and then snuck up after the second report was filed and then made allegations or challenges to the standard of care breach and causation aspects. As a matter of fact, the second motion to dismiss was just an extension of the first motion to dismiss. So from that perspective, the defendants have been consistent throughout this litigation that Dr. Gaines' report was insufficient and gave specific grounds for that.
I guess it was, I think Justice Stofan and I both were just curious. This is such a generic report, and I was wondering, well, how can you get much more generic? And so what is the difference between this and the first report? But I'm not clear about that still.
Well, Chief Justice Casey, as it relates to the articulating a standard of care, setting forth how and in what manner each health care provider breached the standard of care and also the causation opinions, the report is not much different. There was a substantial amount of time devoted to trying to establish Dr. Gaines's qualifications. Okay. That's really what the second report tried to accomplish. I don't believe it did, but it clearly did not fix the problems with the standard of care breach and causation aspects. Mm-hmm. What questions the court was asking Mr. Cobes, I think, illustrates the problem with the report. We're asking Mr. Cobes, what is Dr. Gaines saying here? What's he thinking? Is this what he means? And that's requiring the court to draw inferences from Dr. Gaines' report as to what he means. Now, a physician can draw inferences from the medical records as it relates to then formulating his opinions, but a court cannot draw inferences from the report itself as to, well, we think Dr. Gaines meant this. And that's what you would have to do to meet any of the threshold requirements of Chapter 74. As it relates to Chapter 74, it is not, in essence, a death penalty sanction. What it is a prerequisite to continuing on in the case and exposing physicians and other health care providers to the expense and cost of litigation. In that regard, you just can't say you should have diagnosed it and you should have treated it. I think the cases are clear on that. While, in fact, as discovery proceeds, how and in what manner a treatment should have taken place may evolve, in order to get to the point where discovery is taken on this issue, you got to say, here's how you made the mistake, and here's what you should have done about it. Most cases, well, a substantial amount of medical liability cases are you didn't diagnose it correctly and you didn't treat it correctly. I mean, that's where you get most of your cases. But a report has to say more than you should have diagnosed it and you should have treated it. If that was the standard, then really the requirements of Chapter 74 would be, it wouldn't serve the purpose that Chapter 74 was enacted to serve. And that is, give me your reasons. As it relates to Justice Meyer's question about the cold and numb, he does not equate those to be cardinal signs of RSD. But more importantly, he just present that was a purported presenting symptom the first day she came. There's nothing in the report that addresses what complaints she was making to the physicians on the second day, the third day, or the fourth day. There's nothing about what Dr. McCall was faced with. There's nothing about what Dr. McWatt was faced with. And that's the problem in this case. It's just an insufficient report as it relates to each and every element. I was unable to get to the causation and the qualifications aspects of it in my prior address, but I believe the briefing on this issue adequately addresses both the factual deficiencies in the report and the legal justifications for our arguments in this case. Thank you.
Mr. Blaze, Mr. Cobes, the court appreciates both of you appearing here this morning. Present your arguments have been very helpful. I was just curious, who are the four good-looking young men behind you, Mr. Cobes? Do you know them?
I do not.
Where do they come from? Oh, good. Okay. Well, welcome. Glad you could be up here. We don't have any other arguments to hear this morning, so we'll ask clerk to adjourn us.